This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by, and big thanks to, Archaeological Research and Supply, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, the Heart of Humboldt, Sensa Valley, and our newest sponsor, welcome aboard to Satori Wellness. Thank you very much. We couldn't do it without you. Three words and a phrase are going to frame this edition of the Humboldt Chronicles. The three words are disruption, transition, and adaptation. The phrase, canary in a coal mine. And here's why. We've been hearing for a long while now that the economic adjustment to legal commercial cannabis has been especially difficult in rural California. Locally, Southern Humboldt is no exception. And if SoHum is having trouble in the new economy, SoHum we're talking about here, where folks know a thing or two about marijuana, what chance do other rural areas in California have? Is SoHum then a canary in the cannabis coal mine that is a warning sign for others? Here in the studio is attorney Eric Kirk with decades of family and professional connections in SoHum and also the creator of SoHum Parlance 2 blog. Check that out. Eric, thanks for being here. What's your first overview? What's your take on this to start with?
Well, you know, I mean, we are in a point of transition. We have an economy, particularly in SoHum, but actually Humboldt County and Mendocino, the North Coast in general, that is structured around this industry. With timber having been on the wane for quite a few years, cannabis, a lot of people say cannabis, marijuana is the new timber. They talk about it in terms of political clout. They talk about it in terms of the structure. So it is changing. The more legal it becomes, the more bureaucratic some of the requirements become. The more discussion about how to integrate the industry in general into a changing economy and a changing state economy as well. And there are some who say that the changes are benefiting the larger grows in the urban areas,
right.
Ironically. And
economy of scale.
Economy of scale, because they're the ones who can absorb these new costs, these new ways of doing things, and we really haven't hit an equilibrium yet. Every county's kind of doing its own thing, so there isn't a real uniformity around it, and it's having an impact, and people are having a harder time making money, and that's having an impact in the businesses that have kind of relied on it as they used to rely on timber.
Culturally, too. Cultural changes as well as economic changes.
People who came here to be rogues, to be in the hills and live off the grid and an alternative lifestyle, are finding themselves being kind of dragged back in. And after having gone years, if not decades, of not operating in that, all of a sudden have to worry about workers' compensation, payroll taxes, whatever other agencies are regulating, health department, everything. And it's a lot of paperwork and a lot of stuff they didn't want to have to deal with. They're in the system now.
The man is
taking over the business, and that has positive and negative connotations. But it's a harsh transition. A lot of people are just leaving it, finding other stuff to do.
Yeah, we're going to get into all of this, Eric. Thanks for being here. Let's start with disruption. It's a word used often, as we know, in business to describe a set of circumstances that abruptly shake up an industry such that those who'd previously been the leaders at the top are no longer quite as successful. Clearly, that definition is oversimplified, but it might apply here. Since the late 60s and early 70s, marijuana production, as we know, in this area was regarded as state of the art, commanding a premium price, and for some good reasons: innovation, quality of the product, variety, and so on. Then came Prop 215 in 1996 and the allowance in California for the use of medical marijuana. Then there was the Green Rush. There were attempts to legalize recreational use statewide that failed, but ultimately did lead to passage in 2016 of Prop 64 and everything is now changed. Lower prices for the product mean lower income for producers. There's competition now from all over the state. There are fees, permits, inspections, etc. Here's Humboldt County Supervisor Estelle Fennell, whose district includes the especially hard-hit southern Humboldt County.
Well, I think that the climb in the price has definitely had an impact for people, because people who were in the underground market are getting less for their product, right? So they have less discretionary income. Unfortunately, I don't know where to lay the blame or the cause for that, but one guess I would make is the green rush that happened 10 years ago, maybe 15 at the max, where it began to be industrialized, where people were seeing it as a cash crop in a very big way. So what happened was a lack of foresight. So people said, the price is going down, I'd better grow more. Well, that's not what you see in corn country. You know, that's not what you see in other agricultural markets. If the price is going down, you hold the product back from the market. You don't flood it, because that only brings it down further. So whether or not there was any legalization, the price was going down because there was overproduction, and the overproduction was, it just kept on multiplying on itself. So now you have it legalized because probably of it being flooded, you have more acceptability in, among the voters, etc. So now it's legalized. Now there are costs to actually producing it commercially, and that adds to the woes that people are dealing with.
Following on that, a question that's been on my mind, should we have seen this coming? Should 215's passage in 1996 have been a sign written in all caps that big change was ahead in California? And should we have been working on preparation for this situation for the last 22 years? Again, here's Supervisor Estelle Fennell.
You know, Chuck, that's a very good point. For the longest time, Southern Humboldt was the redheaded stepchild. Cannabis was the secret that everybody kept a secret. It was not acknowledged as a driving force for the economy. All that cash, that all those restaurants, etc., that were supported by that cash, it just was ignored. It was gratefully received, but ignored. And so this is a wake-up call for everyone. And I will say I am proud that the county has stepped forward. We've played a leadership role at the state level. We're very much so the go-to county. And with all of the difficulties that our ordinance offers people who want to get into this market, once they've been through Humboldt County, they don't have any problem with a state permit. So, yes, it's been hard, and I think that Humboldt County could have maybe stepped forward earlier, but at least when it came time to talk about it, we did start talking about it. And the time was actually before either one of those laws was passed. We were getting signals from certain members of the cannabis community that the legislature is going to pass a law. We want you guys to give some input to them. You know, we don't want this to just be created in Sacramento. We want to get some input from where the actual business is going on. So I will say Humboldt did step up, but could Humboldt have stepped up earlier? Probably.
We're going to be hearing more from Supervisor Estelle Fennell a little bit later. First, here again in the studio is Eric Kirk. Eric, comments on whether we should have seen this coming from a public policy and specifically a planning standpoint.
Well, I would actually put it even before the proposition.
Before 96.
Before 215. Prices were actually dropping a bit once camp started to back off, once they started to have less. Local writer in Boonville of the Anderson Valley Advertiser, right. Bruce Anderson, used to refer to camp as the marijuana price support system. Mm-hmm. It drove things underground. It made
the risk higher.
Made the risk higher.
So the price was up. Yeah.
The price went up. People didn't want to do it as much, and there were a lot of risks all the way down the line. You sell it, you know, no matter how careful you are in growing. So anyways, that started, and people were saying as early as 1996, we need to prepare for this. Actually.
But what did we do to prepare?
Not much.
Yeah.
Not much. First of all, there was resistance. Mm-hmm. The attorney general at that point was a very staunch Republican, refused to even acknowledge that it passed. Mm-hmm. The police authorities refused to acknowledge. There had to be a court that issued an injunction that said you need to turn that over right now, and the marijuana that they had taken that was inappropriate because it was protected by 215, and the police said we can't do that because that violates federal law, and the judge said then you give it to me and I'm going to hand it to them, and then they counted, they waited all to make sure none of it was missing right out on the sidewalk, made a big deal about it. It changed, and there was resistance to it for the longest time. Anytime any local government tried to do something like what Humboldt County is doing, it got threatening letters from the federal government, and so it was hard for them to adapt. But the industry.
So you're saying that planning was hampered somewhat because it was difficult for counties and cities and towns to even discuss a plan about this.
There was lag time because of that, because of the institutional resistance, right, and because of the threats to. I believe that Santa Cruz, their city council was threatened, and they said, "Go ahead and arrest us. We're still going to do this." Yeah. And they started to implement. This was for Prop 215.
Right.
So there was so things got slowed down, basically, even with that. But other reasons too. It's hard. How do you plan for it? Right? People start talking about maybe we need to have a Humboldt brand, you know, that we protect once it's there. Maybe that would keep the prices up if Humboldt County, Mendocino County, had its own kind of brand that it had to be grown in Humboldt County.
And well, of course, some people say bringing in other businesses and industries, which is not easy in a rural area,
right?
Especially here where transportation is a problem. But that, I think that's what a lot of people try to get at. We should have seen that we needed to diversify the foundation of this economy a long time ago.
A long time ago, and it's diversification should always be a goal because you never know. What if the market had collapsed?
Absolutely.
And I kind of wondered if there was going to be an increased market for black market stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't quite have the rebel culture that we do now. Yeah. At least you know, like all these people spending $5,000 a month for, you know, 2-bedroom apartment in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Why aren't they buying black market? Because they have the money to buy it from these places and the rest. But I always wonder if that collapses a little bit and they're looking for a better deal, will the black market be done? There's also talks coming from Sessions about, you know, maybe we're going to put a lid on this thing. And I know for a fact there are growers that are like rooting for him to do that.
Well, of course, today the president said he really doesn't have an attorney general anyway. So who knows what's going to happen from the Trump Sessions end of the spectrum here. So we didn't really have a specific plan B going in time.
Nope.
So here we are. So let's go now to the Mateel Community Center in Redway in southern Humboldt, August the 23rd, and locals there expressing their frustrations and anxiety.
I just want to say why we scheduled this meeting was because there's so many people feeling like we're a community in crisis. And small businesses in town are closing. Many others are questioning if they'll be able to survive. And there's a lot of uncertainty about what will be left when the dust settles, what businesses and services will be here. In the past, the community has asked and supported enforcement action on egregious grows damaging our environment. Unfortunately, little was done, and then came the green rush, where the situation grew to a point where things were totally out of control. And now we have legalization, which has brought an avalanche of regulations, permits, fees from multiple agencies and local government. Small grows are being replaced by large industrial-type grows with the vast overproduction and the current price collapse, which is having a huge impact on our local economy and communities.
I really hope you've heard how frightened people are, and I wonder a lot of things. I wonder if you really realized the impact you were going to have on families and the community overall.
Eric, you spend a lot of time working and volunteering in that community.
Yes.
Do those comments reflect what you hear and what you sense in Southern Humboldt?
It definitely is a sense. I've heard of rumors with big, credit bills, people not being able to pay. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, actually, some of my fees, people are having a hard time paying my fees, and I have a lot of clients down there. So it is very real.
So this wasn't just a few people who showed up. up at the Mateel. This is a community-wide kind of thing that's going on.
It is a community-wide concern that the economy is collapsing, that Southern Humboldt is going to be a ghost town. Maybe a little melodramatic because, you know, something usually comes in. There's assets out there that are going to happen. Something will replace it, but that's, again, we always talk about something replacing it. Rather than how about a process, how about a way we can find a sustainable economy? Maybe we don't make the killings that we used to make, but we find other ways to make it work. But it's late in the game for a lot of people, and people are hurting, and you know, some people are in their 50s and 60s and can't just join the workforce and figure out how to do it. And some people complain that the county processes are too onerous if you're for a family business as opposed to a mega grow. That this really selects for the mega grows that are draining the rivers and all of that. So it is a real palpable concern, and it's discussed all over the place, in private and in public.
It is the new reality. Medical marijuana legalized, recreational marijuana legalized, the two folded together legally. Disruption. So we have to learn to navigate the new economy and culture that the voters of California said they wanted. Here's Estelle Fennell again.
Those, I would say, were at least in some part initiated by the consumer, the end user. And they want a legal product. They want to be able to say where it came from, the quality, whether it was tested, whether it's healthy, et cetera, et cetera. So this was now what people have asked for in the past, which is that marijuana not be illegal, that it's a legal product and they love growing it, et cetera. But the impacts of actually going into a regulated market are definitely being felt at this point. And I think for some people, it's maybe what you might call a wake-up moment to suddenly begin to realize that things are not how they have been, and they won't be either. You can't go back at this stage where we are. And so how do we adapt? For years, Humboldt County has been living in a virtual bubble that many would say, don't you understand that the marijuana underground is partially responsible for our flush circumstances? Was maybe even a little bit of a pillow over the 2008 collapse. And now cannabis is having its moment of change, rapid change. So it's a challenge that we haven't had, but what we should have and could have seen coming, and it's here now.
From disruption, we're going to take a look at the current transition period that we seem to be in. Then later on, we'll talk about adaptation and moving forward from here. We'll get to those discussions in just a minute. First, a reminder that we'll be taking your calls a little later at 707-786-5946. Or you can also send us an email with questions or comments at studio@HumboldtChronicles.com. As we go to break, a retail minute from Harry Balance at Heart of Humboldt in Arcata, a business that is noticing we're in a new era.
There's a lot less migratory traffic as far as people searching for work out in the open. Haven't seen near as many cardboard signs with scissors on it this year. None at all. And it's the middle of September, almost the end of it. I mean, generally this town's booming at this time of year and it's just not. So there's a lot of shops that just aren't getting the same amount of traffic that they were getting before. So therefore they're not getting the sales. From what I hear, they've dropped off 30, 50% in some cases compared to 5 years ago when people were doing all right. There was one thing about this business is it seemed to run pretty good as it was. And now it's being put in other people's hands, whether anybody else likes it or not. There's a few good distributors that are actually pulling together with the small people and making it so that they can still have a job and can still farm. And that's been sort of the good thing since July 1st is that more of the local distribution companies are able to help out more of the local retailers. I think Flocan is building a place down in Whitethorn. That's going to be really great. That's going to help everybody on the triangle right there, I think, especially the people that are still trying to get through the permitting process. From what I hear, Flocan is helping with things like that. Emerald Family Farms is another one of those companies. These are people we do business with partly because we want to, and we want Humboldt County flower. That's kind of the beauty right now of the store is now it's 90% easily, and that makes me feel a lot better. When people come through from out of town, people come through from out of the country, or people who come through from in town, I feel good knowing that they're getting good products from right here. Kind of cool. So if you've got, you know, the local mechanic coming in to buy a cartridge or buy some flowers, when he sees that the flower is being produced in Humboldt County, or he knows that it's being produced in Humboldt County, County and people are getting paid in Humboldt County so they can raise their families and get groceries, then everybody wins. This is Harry at the Heart of Humboldt. You can find us on Instagram or Leafly. Check us out for our menu and deals and updates. Or you can just call us or stop on by and keep the Heart of Humboldt beating.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. In the first part of our discussion, we outlined the disruption our local economy has undergone. The second part of the discussion is going to focus on the current phase we're in, which I'll call transition. In any economy, a transition phase is characterized by changes in the very structure of trade and commerce, as an example, pricing, the roles of state and local governments, the financial sector that facilitates business activity, and so on. Certainly, moving from an economy that's been supplemented by black market enterprises to one that is dependent on legal, regulated model qualifies as a moment of transition. Here again is County Supervisor Estelle Fennell.
It's going to be difficult, just like any other transition is. And so there is and will continue to be a dip for a while in that discretionary income for people. But what I'm hoping is that they can see their way to supporting themselves, maybe not in as flush a manner as before, but they can stay afloat until this regulated market builds up. So that's one thing. The other thing is, again, I would stress there are a lot of jobs that go with this regulated economy. If you take it down to its basic model in the outlaw underground economy was you grew your marijuana, you processed it, you distributed it, you brought it to market, you did the whole nine yards. You're not able to do that right now. So what it's going to require is the person who cultivates, the person who processes, the person who manufactures, who packages, who distributes, on and on and on. So there are a lot of jobs involved with this.
Following on that, back here in the studio with us is Eric Kirk. Eric, your thoughts on where we are in this economic transition phase and how bumpy it might be.
Well, one of the real problems with the transition is we talk about, okay, we're setting up bureaucracy so they can operate in the real world and all that. But one thing they can't do is they have no access to banking. Because that's all federally regulated.
That's right.
And that makes it a real problem to function in the economy. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you got to have payroll, you got to be able to do things, you got to be able to document what you're doing, but because of the federal regulations, they cannot bank.
Right.
And even when I know a local attorney who was trying to actually help people with develop their programs and was taking money, because that's sometimes what attorneys do, seed money to help do it. And when the bank found out about it, they shut down his trust account. Mm-hmm. And said, no, we're in a bad shape. So there's certain things that really have to change. There's still that institutional resistance at the federal level, and that's a big one.
Do you support the idea of a public bank?
I do, but I supported that long before I knew anything about this. I think there should be a national bank.
And for our listeners, that means a bank that's outside the Federal Reserve System that acts as a money vault where people can actually do business, but it's not part of the federal system.
Not part of the federal system, although I don't know how that works in terms of everything is regulated, and that is in the Commerce Clause. Unless the federal government says, okay, you can have that bank and not operate, and we still are dependent on some action from Congress, and they're stuck. You know, it's sort of like, you've got that meme about the button of the two contradicting things. You got 10th Amendment, but their policies and their old-time politics about drugs, and particularly marijuana, which, you know, still in category one, whatever it is, which would have actually, if it ever gets taken out of that, then it's going to be a mess, because now doctors have to come up with guidelines for prescriptions, and it becomes a medicine officially. I mean, we're looking.
It's a multi-layered thing, and a lot of people have said along those lines since we've been doing this show that the real answer is a federal answer, but who knows when or if that may happen.
Right, exactly. What they need to do at this point, even if they're not going to legalize it federally, is state that if you're in your own state and complying with your own state's laws, that you can operate and you can bank. Mm-hmm. And they need to do that. But that's going to take some real effort. And right now, it doesn't seem like that's something that
I think it might take Republicans seeing this as an economic issue rather than a culture war issue.
Yeah, and there is some indication
some of them
see it that way.
Yeah. One of the things Estelle Fennell mentioned in her comment was the expectation that there will be a dip dip in discretionary income for a while. And it's easy to understand why. It's also easy to imagine at least one sector of the economy that might feel the pain of that dip. That's nonprofit organizations that depend heavily on contributions people make from their discretionary income. Back to the community meeting at the Mateel and Redway.
I generally advocate for the kids and the nonprofits, and we are losing big time in all of this. Our nonprofits, our schools, our boosters, you know, we need to raise $100,000 every year to make our sports good, our local high schools, and I don't know how we're going to do it this year. And all of our nonprofits, hospice, everybody is struggling big time, and that's the trickle down of what's going on around here.
You can hear from the crowd that she really struck a chord there. Eric, following on that, you've done and still do a lot of work with nonprofits in SOHUM. Can they stay afloat until this new economy is established such that donations pick up again? If so, how?
They're struggling. Yeah. I mean, they're struggling. Of course, you know, I'm sure you've covered the Mateel is in trouble and having those problems.
A lot of bills to pay.
There may have been issues that are independent of all of this with the Mateel, but, you know, problems that they ran into in terms of decline of festivals and things like that. There's another bloated market, by the way, but other issues as well. And yes, the nonprofits are in trouble. There's we had a lot of nonprofits that came out of the boom of the 80s.
Sure.
A lot of them. We probably had a record per capita of nonprofits down there. We've got community centers all over the place, small and large ones. We've got, you know, organizations to do a lot of good work, environmental groups, everything.
Independent schools down there, all kinds of things.
And they're all suffering.
The end result of a transition like this, of course, should be diversification of the economy and new opportunities that should be taken advantage of if this is to work. Here's Humboldt County Supervisor Estelle Fennell again.
This is handed on a plate to the economy if the economy will absorb it. Here we have a brand new industry. It's been going underground for 40 years, something like that. But it's brand new in the regulated market. So this is part of diversifying it. You accept it. We've created the ordinances. We have an excise tax. We'll have tourism. We'll have permitted businesses in Humboldt County that will all be a recognized part of the economy that will be counted when you do the economic tests at the end of the year and will be actually a part of the economy. Before, it's only been guessed at. And this is really interesting. I just had a chat with the planning director, and they're just beginning to initiate a program, a software program called Excella, which will give them all of the details about every permit that's out there. They've never had that. They've never had those figures. So it will be folded into the economy, just as like wind energy, which is what we're working on now, or anything else.
Of course, all of this is easier said than done, especially in the throes of great change, uncertainty, and anxiety about the future. Here again is Estelle Fennell.
My hope is that the people who are there for the community, who love Humboldt, who want to stay here and make a living and make it better, will succeed. And those are the people that I really want to work with and help and see succeed. My message to anybody who's questioning what that means for them is don't start to overachieve. Start small. Start at a manageable level and grow if you can. But don't bite off more than you can chew, because people are used to high profits with very little expenses. The expenses are more now in the regulated market. Honestly, I think that it requires leadership both at the county level but also in the industry. It requires the kind of thinking outside the box. Not everybody has those kinds of gifts, so it requires working with each other and inspiring each other and making it happen. It can happen, and it will. It will happen. I get the frustration that I saw in that meeting. I get that people are hurting, and I get that the regulation process is very difficult, because you're not just dealing with the county, you're dealing with the state in all its glory. So many agencies that you're dealing with. It's a bear. It's not for everyone, you know, but the fact of the matter is that this has been coming since 1996. Proposition 215, then SB 420, and then a couple of attempts at legalizing it that finally were successful. So It's been coming, but you can't say to people you should have seen it coming, but it has been on its way.
Eric, your thoughts on what Estelle Fennell has to say there. There are parts of her comments that are optimistic. She thinks ultimately this is going to work. What do you think?
I mean, you know, we've got some real assets in Humboldt County. You know, one thing about capitalism is it exploits assets. We've got a lot of talent here. We've got a beautiful situation here. I think we need to really think in terms of, I mean, we have to help through this transition, but we also really have to think in terms of diversifying the economy, in terms of bringing some other things in here. And there's a lot of discussion, you know, about the East-West Railroad. Can we be a port town and all that? Maybe a little optimistic there and a little bit of, you know, some con stuff going on there. But maybe, you know, some possibilities there in terms of it being a port or a place. Tourism, it's rare that a place can be the primary industry. It can supplement industries, yeah. But it's fine. One of the things we really need to look at, though, is improving the internet and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Because one thing that is booming in California is the tech industry, and I'm sure they would love to come to a beautiful place and look. And one of the things that happened about 10-15 years ago, Oracle came up and was looking out on the peninsula, yeah, at the old site. You know, and I've wondered why local leaders, the cities, the county, haven't contacted Oracle and said, what made you interested? What made you not interested? And what can we do?
What can we do now?
What can we do now? What right. would make you interested in that again? You know, and maybe they were just looking, maybe, you know, window shopping or whatever. But there was some reason that they were interested in that for something that they had in mind. It's, you know, it's a beautiful place. If we have infrastructure and things to offer to a crowd, and we can maybe control it so it doesn't get gentrified in quite the crazy way, yeah, it's happened with the Bay Area. You know, where everything is wrapped around it, but as part of a multi functional thing, we really need to look at that as part of a multiple industry. If we could bring in some of that, we've got a university here, we've got libraries that we can, right, improve if we have the money to do it. We're working on the bike trails. All of that could point to a community that could be of interest to people, to the high tech culture,
and a lower cost of living than the Bay Area,
a lower cost
Los Angeles.
Of living, which would increase. So we want to be careful about it.
Yeah, but we've got attracting businesses.
Exactly.
Businesses that want to be in California or want to, ones that are already here, but want to stay in, yeah, California. This is one of the, other than the Central Valley, this is one of the last affordable places.
And the tech places, you know, there've been competitions opening up back in states, inland states, yeah, but they don't want to live there. The talent, right, doesn't want to live there. They want to live in a beautiful place. They, right, want to be there, but the Bay Area is getting overcrowded, overpriced. So, you know, what could we do to attract startups, mm-hmm, and or, you know, existing companies in to at least, you know, get something here, some, yeah, type of research and development, you know, with the housing. And yeah, prices would go up a little bit, but, you know, that's okay.
Right.
You know, for if it's planned, if we have, mm-hmm, it that's planned, but we got to look into it. Maybe there are other industries too. Maybe people in the hills can grow other things, do other things.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Other than bringing people in, the people, mm-hmm, who are already here,
right,
many of them, as you have said before in our discussions before, are innovative people.
Talented.
That's why they were able to make it in Southern Humboldt in the first place.
Right.
So what do they do now?
Exactly. I mean, you know, I mean, some people are starting wineries. We've got, you know, wineries, but that's also a saturated market. I mean, every, yeah, you go down into Sonoma County, Napa County, every corner they can,
yeah,
fill with it, you know, and it also can take water, but it can also be low water. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, it depends on it. But other types of things, are there other types of products that can be done out there? One person told me, you know, maybe we don't need an economic plan or a big ticket, you know, factory. That's the old model. Maybe we need to have people work on their organic farms, their cottage industries, and try to develop something that we can export, you know, that's useful for that, tied into the tourist industry. But it's got to really be thought out and planned and worked towards. And,
yeah,
there can't be a lot of resistance to it. And there is cultural resistance to bike trails, cultural resistance to that, because there are a lot of people who've lived here for a long time. time, whether regardless of what wave they came in, that don't want cultural mm-hmm. changes. They don't like it. They moved here to get away from stuff mm-hmm. like that. But that, but this is, you know, one of the things that we need to work on to make it attractive, and to develop it. We have to develop. You know, we're not going to become a sustainable economy that can be separate from the rest of the world. That's just not going to happen. Yeah. You know, we can't grow coffee here, right? So we have to think in terms of what do we have to offer the rest of the world that brings money here. Money goes out, money comes in, but what brings the money in? And you know, we had festivals, we've had the marijuana, and we have the port dream, whether it's a pipe dream, who knows? And maybe timber will fire up again if there's some big earthquake or something like that, and they change the regulations. But even that's only is just again back to more of the same. We've got to come up with a plan for how we're going to do this, and we do have assets here, we have people, and all of that. But there's got to be some leadership that's focused on that, and that's
critical.
It's got to take the time to research it. And right now, for one thing, the permitting thing with cannabis is taking up so much of the county's time. Mm-hmm. There isn't much for anything else. It's a huge thing.
Well, one of the things we're going to talk about in the next segment are ideas, adaptation. How do we move forward? But before we get to that, just quickly, where are you? Are you optimistic? Somewhat optimistic? Pessimistic? A little? Where are you on that spectrum?
For the long run, something always comes of it. We don't have permanent. It's not like inland where we have permanent. We're on the coast, which is an ideal place to live. Mm-hmm. Something will make use of it. I'm optimistic about that. I'm pessimistic a little bit about the people, about the fact that a lot of people are going to be hurt in this transition, and what we can do to soften that. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong. But until there is some visionary planning and something to be done that as Estelle and other people have said should have been done years ago, until we do this, there isn't going to be a revival of timber. There isn't going to be a revival of marijuana. You can grow it anywhere now. It's legal.
Yeah, right.
You can grow it in the valley and
in a warehouse.
And she's right, by the way. It's a shame because the marijuana here was what kind of cushioned the fall in 2008 that kept us from being crashed like some of the places in the valley. We saw malls being boarded up and everything
over the country.
But we don't have a cushion right now. And right now the economy is kind of booming. It might be a temporary thing, but it's booming at the moment, and we're not really benefiting from it at the moment. Maybe if there were more people with money out there willing to buy black market marijuana, we would be. But it's right now. Doesn't seem to be the reality.
Our guest, Eric Kirk, is going to be staying with us. And next, we're going to take a look specifically at how we move forward in this climate. By the way, you can reach us if you want to at 707-786-5946 or studio at HumboldtChronicles.com. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Thanks for being there. Here in the studio with us is longtime Humboldt County attorney and blogger, Eric Kirk. If you have a comment or question, you can reach us at 707-786-5946 or via email at studio@HumboldtChronicles.com. So far, in our focus on the changing economy of our area, specifically Southern Humboldt, we've touched on disruption and transition, which gets us to adaptation, that is, accepting the new reality of the cannabis business and the legal regulated market and navigating a way forward. To begin with, a suggestion that we hear often, maybe more than anything else, the idea of co-ops. Humboldt County Supervisor Estelle Fennell has mentioned them, and co-ops were discussed at the recent community meeting at the Mateel in Redway.
For anyone who is involved in the permitting process as a small farm, 10,000 square feet, type 1 or type 2 permit, the only way for you to survive is to join a co-op. And if the county actually cares about what's going to happen in the community, this is the only way that we're going to have small farms.
The idea of co-ops is extremely important, and I have stressed this from the very beginning. You can't have 2,000 or 3,000 separate businesses here. It doesn't work for any segment of the community. Look at logging. It doesn't even work for logging. So the bottom line is, co-ops. So you've got your individual farmers that then work together as a co-op. Now, they can set the price. And if the product is as good as everybody tells us it is, then they can set a premium price. They can set the market just as the fishermen do with crab or whatever. So, yeah, it's not going to be as lucrative as it has been in the past where you didn't have the kind of expenses of a regulated market. But I do think, you know, if you recognize the challenge and you keep to something that's manageable, you can get through. If you think that you can make hundreds of thousands of dollars of profit in today's world, you're going to have to be awfully big. And I don't think most people want to be that big.
Eric Kirk back here in the studio with us. Eric, co-ops certainly help with economy of scale, which is essential in a mass market economy. Right?
As well as price control, because if you all have an agreement, the co-ops would have to extend out of the county, though, because you've really got to, if you're going to have like an OPEC type, you know, let's control the price, it's got to be everywhere. It can't, you can't just, you know, have it be in Humboldt County, then people come in and undersell everything here or overproduce. There's got to be some kind of planning, and there is national and state plans for other types of agriculture that we don't have. You know, you get subsidies for
price supports,
supports, and the rest for doing it. We don't have that for this particular agricultural option.
Again, that would be a federal solution.
That's right. It would help localities, but there just isn't the will for that yet. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that's it would be a start. It would be a start if everybody was just kind of was joining the co-ops, maybe able to spread some of the onerous requirements around. If the permits could be set up to allow for that, I don't know anything about how they're set up. Is, you know, you have a permit for a particular, it goes to a particular piece of land for a certain amount of stuff. If you can, if one co-op could have all these different permits and operate on that basis and then spread the costs and kind of do some, when one of them gets hit with something, they all kind of share in that. Certainly that would help with a transition. But the question is whether or not, we really, really, really have to ask, is whether or not marijuana is a future to be based on. We really need to address that. Are people going to be growing marijuana, small farm marijuana grows in the future in Humboldt County?
What's your answer to that?
I don't know.
Nobody knows yet.
No, it's just, you know, but we have to take into account the possibility that it may just not be an industry that Humboldt County can survive. Can we compete with the big farms that will, you know, happen
inevitably
in the valley and other places once the more legal this becomes? And so is it really, you know, future? There'll always be some market for Humboldt grown stuff, you know, made the sort of the boutique stuff. But
the question is what size will that market
be? How much can we actually make off it? And should we trying to transition to have a sustainable marijuana industry, or maybe do we start transitioning away from reliance on that industry altogether?
Can we do both?
Yeah, I think so. I think we can do both. I mean, one of the things that's going to happen with some of those properties, people have built beautiful properties out there, buildings. I mean, you go in and into houses, and you'll see that Madrone, you know, are used to hold stuff up, and it's just a lot of innovation in that. You know, kind of like you know, hippie Sunset Magazine, you know, would go out there. These places, you know, we have this increasing market of vacation homes that have been kind of I forget what the Uber equivalent is, but you know, and retreat centers and things like that. You know, the rustic quality might appeal. Maybe we need to really push that. That's different from tourism.
Airbnb,
but also for retreats and things for companies. Maybe we need to start marketing that. You come out, you drive out on a rustic dirt road, trying to press the marketing for that as well. Maybe that's, you know, something we need to look to in a systematic way.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions along those lines. One, I want to go down the avenue there of alternative businesses that might pop up. But if we can have some sort of cannabis industry here, as we also bring in other things as well, the idea of co-ops, you're saying that too many competing co-ops would defeat the purpose. So,
I would think so. Are
you arguing in the co-op area that they be more regional?
I think we need to think beyond just Humboldt County. I think we need to think about, you know, some type of...
like an Emerald Triangle co-op.
Something
or even
like
bigger
that.
Than that.
Maybe. I mean, it's just... The fragmentation is a real serious issue because it's led to the gluts. So how do we prevent the gluts that lead to...
That's exactly what OPEC does.
The stuff. Now, there are people who are, like, for instance, transforming the marijuana into stuff that lasts longer, you know, the oils and things, the crude, as they call it, to last longer. But still, there's going to be glut on that, people, because that lasts, you know, much longer. And until that kind of works its way through, and like I said, but again, I don't know what the response is going to be. If we lower production here in the Emerald Triangle, is somebody else going to up the production somewhere else?
In their 60,000 square foot warehouse in Riverside or somewhere,
Los Angeles or something. And be able to profit based on economies of scale.
Right. Well, let's get some more specifics from Humboldt County Supervisor Estelle Fennell right now. Jobs that could be and are being created in the new economy.
They'll be doing wiring for manufacturing and or distribution centers, processing centers. They'll be doing that also out on the various cultivation areas that need that kind of thing, laying foundations for those greenhouses, on and on and on. That's being done now and has been for quite some time, very much so. And I think that what we need to do is make sure that that also stays in the community and isn't just from outside, you know, because that is a really important part of it, is to keep local money local and to work with each other.
And that's not all. In fact, this next piece of information was news to me, and it's an example of the kind of thinking outside the box that is often essential in a changing economic situation.
There are other things people can do with their expertise. I talked to somebody at a fundraiser. They're toying with the idea of making sherry. There's all sorts of local land-based type businesses that people could get involved in.
Eric, were you aware of the sherry industry finding a way into the hills?
I was not. I've heard of wineries. I've heard of people trying to open up lavender farms, which is a dry growth, but I have not heard of sherry. I mean, that's certainly can't hurt to
Would that
open
be
up
blackberry? Sometimes. I don't know. What? Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know. Or what are the purple things? Mm-hmm. Not the blueberries, but the other ones. I forget. Huckleberries.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's certainly we do have other things coming out of the hills now. It's not.
Well, get back to what you were saying earlier, that the people who are here, especially in Southern Humboldt, are innovative. Mm-hmm. Thinkers out of the box. That's exactly what's going to be needed now. That's what made them successful to start with.
Right.
So now we're just entering a new phase of the need for that kind of innovation again. And, you know, sherry is an example. Some people have suggested distillers could move into the hills and, you know, begin work there as well.
I agree. That takes a bit of water.
It does, and water, which is an issue.
Right. Water, part of another reason, you know, some of this oversight in the agencies is that water is in trouble. We're draining the rivers. You know, we've had a couple of instances where the Batol and the Eel haven't reached above ground up the ocean in a couple of years, and doesn't seem to be letting up anytime soon. Got a lot of straws growing into those rivers, and so whatever we do, it's got to be something that we can do with water. So I don't know what's involved with sherry. You know, I don't know if it's a dry farm kind of thing, but dry farming is a thing, and we can think about what to do and develop some of those techniques and all of that. And I don't know that it'll ever be a substitute for marijuana, but if people can find a way to make a living out in those hills, then those places will be assets. And telecommuting was a thought before, right?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It hasn't really manifested itself, but
you still hear it, though.
You still hear it, and it still does happen. You know, we have writers out there submit stuff. We've even had a few famous writers out in the hills.
So but it would take a lot of them.
It would take a lot of them. It takes, you know, so it's got to be, again, we need to think in terms of, you know, having a diverse portfolio portfolio, so to speak, of things. And sherry, great, part of the picture.
Yeah, bring me a case of it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you to look 5 years or 10 years or 15 years down the road, specifically at Southern Humboldt. What do you think you might see?
Boy, it's really hard to say.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. Maybe it'll stabilize and it'll still remain kind of a marijuana-based economy with a few other things going on to do that. I mean, you know, remember the boom after the war. She mentions that logging companies had to consolidate. There were times when people would set up their own, you know, mills on their own property and the rest. In the post-war boom, when all of a sudden fur became mm-hmm. something important for building Daly City and all of the suburban areas in the Bay Area and Los Angeles even, and you know, people, everybody had it was kind of like microbreweries and all that. Everybody was kind of doing their own thing. It obviously came to an end, and there was big, you know, transition, a lot of overlogging, a lot of stuff that we're still paying for environmentally, but you know, and possibly worsening issues such as the 1964 flood and even the sheeting we have now that keeps, you know, the water from getting absorbed into some of the watersheds. So it's we have to, you know, think about that, but everybody we do need to, you know, rely on and find ways to promote individual initiative. We do have small business loans, things that you know, have applied. We need to incubate it. Maybe go easy on the regulation a little bit. You know, I say that as a big government liberal, but I do think that sometimes the paperwork is worse than the taxes and the fees. You know, we got to make
it's
it
time
easier
away
to,
from what you're doing,
right?
For sure,
it is. And you know, and if you don't know it, it's even worse. So maybe we need to relook at some of these regulations and that are on, for including the marijuana industry, and determine, is that really necessary?
Maybe that's a business idea for firms that want to go in and help do the paperwork and the office work and so on as a business is getting started.
Well, that's happening. Well, actually, engineers are doing that.
Yeah.
They're sort of
taking
up doing that.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I mean, what it's going to look like, I just don't know. I know it'll be there. It's not going to become a ghost town. If it is, it's not going to stay a ghost town. I hope not. We've got people that have been there for years from you know, the Back to Land movement and before, and we don't want to lose all of that cultural continuity.
Yeah. We want to thank our guest attorney, Eric Kirk, here in the studio, and also Humboldt County Supervisor Estelle Fennell for making time to talk with us. And we also want to say thanks to radio station KMUD, KMUD in Redway, for audio from the community meeting at the Mateel. Larry, I'm guessing two things. One, you did learn something in the last hour. And secondly, if there is anybody in this area who would have known that sherry was being produced in the hills, it's you.
I would like to think that's true. I would like to think that, you know, sherry originally comes from Spain, and in Spain, the name for sherry is Jerez, which is also the geographical name for the region, which gives you some idea of how important it is to that part of Spain, or at least it was.
I've learned something.
I love to see a sherry industry develop, but I'm not sure that that's our salvation.
Yeah.
But I did learn a lot of stuff, and I think that this is an important topic, and it's one that is kind of difficult to discuss in a sense because there are so many unknowns.
Yeah,
one of the things I learned as we were putting this episode together is that there's not enough time in one episode to cover the whole topic.
Yeah, that's for sure. So thus the second part of it in October. Larry, let me also ask you, if we have a minute here, you know, I've been asking people whether they're optimistic or pessimistic or where they are. After working on this show for almost a year now, how are you feeling about especially SoHum?
Well, I think I share Eric's sort of short-term pessimism. I think that this is a time of transition and disruption, and it's going to maybe get a little bit worse before it starts to get better. I don't think that cannabis, no matter what happens, is going to be, you know, the economic boon to this entire, you know, region that people might have thought 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, there was a belief that, boy, once this becomes legalized, we're on easy street, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we'll figure it out as we have all along. I mean, we've faced you know, industries that sustained us that went away before. And we've managed to come up with solutions, and I think we'll do that here. I just think it's going to take some time.
Yeah, boom, bust, and boom again. Let's hope. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. I want to thank again those who make this program possible, our sponsors, Archaeological Research and Supply, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, The Heart of Humboldt, Sensa Valley, and our newest sponsor, welcome aboard to Satori Wellness. We couldn't do it without you. We will be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month. So that means we will see you next time, October the 17th at 6 p.m.